We're going to turn our attention now to a separate issue, but also keep you abreast of developments in this story, and that is with the Minister for State, Christopher O'Sullivan, who's with us on the line. Minister for State, Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage, with Special Responsibility for Nature, Heritage and Biodiversity. And Minister O'Sullivan, good morning to you and thanks for joining me this morning. We'll talk in a moment about the new voluntary code of practice for companies dealing with wildlife tours. But first, can I ask you your concerns or your reaction to what we've seen over the weekend and the primary concern for Irish citizens living in the region?
Yeah, look, obviously there's a lot of concern there, Gerry. We've got quite a lot of citizens living in that region, I think in the region of 20,000 in the UAE. Thankfully, so far as we can tell so far, there's been no injuries or no casualties with Irish citizens living in that area. But as you can imagine, over the weekend, people like myself, many TDs and public representatives right across the country have been inundated with calls from concerned parents, concerned family members, relatives, friends who may have loved ones living in that area. We all know somebody, or we all have somebody connected to us who's either teaching or working in Dubai or UAE in some way, shape or form. So it's amazing how all of a sudden an international conflict, you know, really hits right at home and right on our front door, even though it is a long way away from the island of Ireland. But that said, look, the I suppose recommendation, and you've covered it on the show already, Gerry, that the recommendation to citizens is to shelter, to try and stay safe, to register with the Department of Foreign Affairs. Unfortunately, the consular teams within these areas themselves are quite small, so it's, even though, you know, there's no harm in trying to get in touch with the consular team in whichever particular part of the UAE or the Middle East that you're in, they're probably overwhelmed at the moment considering the volume of Irish people over there. So the strong advice is to try and get in touch with the Department of Foreign Affairs. That number has been well publicized now. But that team has been bolstered and increased, but with the volume of calls we're getting, I do understand frustration where some people may have difficulty sometimes getting through, but I would say keep trying and make sure that you register so that we know your whereabouts, and it's a developing situation. I suppose for any family members listening out there, we and the Irish government will do whatever is necessary to ensure the safety of our citizens, and there will be no shortage of effort to do that.
Yeah, and that certainly will be the case. The dangerous thing here, though, and we're seeing reports now of an oil strike in a refinery in Saudi Arabia, is and also reports from other sources coming through that the leadership, or what's left of the Iranian leadership, are saying they will not be negotiating with the US side. That follows reports from Donald Trump yesterday, US president, saying he's ready to talk, or that Iran wants to talk, suggesting that this will happen and it might calm tensions down. It doesn't look like that's the case this morning. He's saying 4 weeks. The whole point about it is, I suppose, is there's desperate uncertainty now for everybody in the area and everyone as to where this will go and the impact it will have in all of our lives.
Yeah, look, what we've seen during the last number of years in particular, the geopolitical situation is so unpredictable and hard to predict and unstable, you know, which is why I suppose in Ireland we're so lucky that we do, you know, the democratic situation here is pretty stable. The country is in a pretty stable situation, and it's almost like a beacon of light compared to the rest of the world, which really has become unpredictable and unstable from a geopolitical point of view. I mean, with the war in Ukraine, the horrible atrocities in Gaza from the Israeli government there, but also now this is spreading throughout the Middle East, and it's really, really hard to predict. So, you know, it'd be lovely to be able to try and reassure the public out there that, look, you know, that diplomacy will prevail here and that wise heads will come together and find a resolution. But it's with the leadership internationally at the moment in some areas, that's hard to say. So it's very hard to predict how this will escalate, how it'll spread, how widely it will spread. I read this morning that there may have been an incident in Cyprus as well, a British army base there. So you know, it's scary. There's no other word to describe it, how it's escalating. So I suppose our call and the call of the Irish government and the Taoiseach and Minister of Foreign Affairs is that, look, heads need to come together now. International leaders need to come together and try to find a resolution to this as quickly as possible, so that, you know, we minimise the loss of lives, we stop the loss of lives, but also we minimise the impact for so many other areas, whether it's travel, etc., that many people are feeling the frustration today.
Yeah, and look, there are people dead and people dying, and that's the primary concern, that we want to stop the conflict. But there are real world concerns as well for us here in this country in terms of energy and energy prices, which are already high. We're seeing European gas prices up by 20% today. That's not going to do anybody any favours on the financial side of it, Minister.
No, fair play to your point. You know, like the primary concern here is obviously loss of life and people's safety. That has to be number one. But again, you know, people do have to get on with their lives, and people are thinking about how this conflict will impact them. And obviously, whenever you have conflict or outbreak of war or disruption in the Middle East, then it always seems inevitable that the price of oil is impacted. Look, I'm really sure that Ireland is part of a conglomeration of countries who have stocks of oil and gas in reserve. So we're not predicting any major increase in we'll say the price of fuel at the petrol pumps in the immediate term. We're always explained, and it's always explained to us, especially from the energy companies and electricity providers, that energy is and fuel is hedged, and they buy in advance, so any impact shouldn't be felt immediately. So it is surprising to hear the increases. But look, I totally understand that's a concern, and that's something that will be taken into account, that if there is any hikes, that we try to cushion our public and the people living here in Ireland from it as much as possible. We've done that in the past. We've done it with the outbreak of war in Ukraine when Russia launched an attack in Ukraine. We brought in measures, temporary measures, whether it was duty on or excise on fuel or other type of reliefs. And if that's necessary, we will look at that again. I'm sure the Irish government won't be found wanting in that regard.
Okay, Minister, to matters at hand, you're in Dingle today. You're launching a new code of conduct, a voluntary code of conduct. This is for to protect marine wildlife in the southwest. This is for tour operators, and it's a pilot program. Is that right?
It is, yeah. I'm in Dingle today, Jerry. The sun is shining. Obviously, it's probably always like this in Kerry, is that the sun is nearly always shining down in Dingle.
It wasn't like it yesterday.
it's beautiful down here, absolutely stunning. And obviously Dingle, one of the forerunners when it came to marine wildlife and eco tours, obviously for decades, fungi have been such a massive attraction here, and really setting the you know, so much experience down here in terms of marine eco tours. So what we're doing today is, look, we're lucky here in the southwest, as you well know, and people from Kerry and West Cork will know, we have some of the most incredible whale watching in the entire planet. You know, on certain seasons and certain times of year, we can see some of the biggest, most extraordinary animals in the planet. You know, animals like fin whales, the second biggest animal that's ever lived, humpback whales, you know, very you know, often seen off the Blaskets or around the Skilligs, common dolphin, you name it, we have it here. So it's amazing that we have it. There's been a growth in the ecotourism, in that providers are bringing people out to witness these extraordinary spectacles. And that's a phenomenal thing, because the more people who've witnessed these encounters and spectacles, the more people who will love these species and the more people who want to protect them. So it's a very, very good thing. Now, the purpose of this is that we want to ensure that this is done in a sustainable way. So, look, we want to be assured that these incredible animals that we're lucky that come to feed here off the southwest, some choose to breed as well. Some of the bird species and other mammal species that come here, we want to ensure that there's as little disturbance as possible, so that these animals continue to come here and that they can do so in a safe way. So what we're doing today is we're launching a code of conduct. This has been, I want to dip my hat to the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group, who have participated in this. My own department, the National Parks and Wildlife Service, have participated. But there's about 30 tour operators, or 30 people who are regularly bringing people out to see these animals. They're participating as well. And what we'll do is we'll do this as a pilot, as a trial period, to see how it can work, and whether we can work it in a way that allows people to encounter these incredible species that we have off the southwest, but also do so in a safe manner.
Is it about, as the popularity increases, being able to provide that sort of tourism, that service, but in a safe way that doesn't affect the very things people come to see?
Yeah, it's trying to get ahead of it. Like when you look at whale watching hotspots, like we'll say Australia, Sydney, for example, Vancouver in Canada, these places, what you notice is in some instances you get, you know, you may have this incredible whale species that may be either traveling, may have a calf with her, and very quickly, because of the popularity of whale watching in these regions, they're surrounded by boats. Now, a lot of these animals, these cetaceans, the bigger whales, they hunt using acoustics, using sound essentially. And if you have a lot of disruptions with engine noise and other loud activities, then that will impact the whale's ability to feed or to move or to behave in their natural way. So we want to get ahead of that. Luckily in Ireland, you know, as I said, we have world-class whale watching, but quite often you may be the only boat out there with that particular feeding frenzy or a fin whale, or, you know, you could have a humpback whale breaching and you may be the only boat in the vicinity. Now, it's becoming more popular, so there are more boats out in the water, and we just want to ensure that sound doesn't become a disturbance, or that we don't lead to a situation where, for example, a mother and calf are separated, which could have devastating consequences. But it goes beyond the whales. I know I'm focusing on the whales a lot. Obviously, you know, on the skelligs there, I mean, you have some of one of the most important breeding bird colonies in the entire planet. And the tour providers there, in fairness, and I've been out there a couple of times, they're really respectful. They keep a distance from the birds to ensure the birds aren't disturbed. We just want to ensure that continues, that, you know, we're seeing an increase in drone activity, that these drones don't get too close to the bird species, that, you know, it's a very, we'll say in May, June in particular, a very important time of year from a breeding point of view. If a bird, you know, abandons a nest because of disturbance, then that's the end of that, those eggs. So we just want to look, we want to promote the fact that we have this amazing wildlife spectacles on our doorstep, but ensure it's done in a sustainable manner. And I want to thank again the tour providers and the Irish Wind Dolphin Group for their collaboration on this.
Yeah, a final point on that. Can that be achieved on the wider sense of it? You're talking here about ecotourism and ecotours, but some people would argue, and we're seeing in some other countries, Minister, that there's a bit of a pushback from locals against tourism for various different reasons, housing, that it's becoming more unsustainable. What's your comment in relation to Ireland's efforts to make tourism sustainable?
Yeah. In fairness, I don't think we've reached that massive, I suppose, scale or critical number where it's become unsustainable. You do see it. I think, you know, even along our beaches where you may have breeding bird populations, and in May and June, which is vitally, vitally important for many of these species, you will see extra people flocking to the beaches. And sometimes, you know, look, we all really love bringing our dogs for a walk, which is we have to strike a balance here. You know, people need to be allowed to go out and enjoy nature. It's so important. And as I said at the very outset, If people can enjoy nature, then they'll love it and they'll want to protect it, which is part of my kind of role, is to try and encourage people to want to protect nature. But having said that, there has to be an element of responsibility there. For example, letting dogs off a leash where you know there's breeding birds, again, you may lead to abandonment of a nest and eggs become exposed, and essentially that nest fails. So I get what you're saying, Jerry. Like, we have to do it in a responsible way, but I suppose that's where my department comes in. We need to ensure that trails are marked so that we keep people off the most sensitive areas.
Yeah. Okay, Minister, we're going to leave it there. Thanks very much for talking to us in the program this morning. Good luck with that launch in Dingle. It's Minister Christopher O'Sullivan there on the line.